For a little more than 6 years, the ABC Radio Network produced a series entitled Mr. President. Beginning on June 26, 1947, and running until September 23, 1953. Each half-hour episode was based on a thoroughly researched incident in the life of one of the people who have held the office of President of the United States. But the dialogues were written in such a way as not to reveal the name of the president until the very last line of the dialogue at the end of the program, when the president would be addressed by name. A radio ad for the program noted, and I quote, "Each week the suspense mounts from its first question, which one of our 32 presidents am I?" Remember now, this was 1947 to 1953, so it only covers Presidents Washington to Dwight David Eisenhower, who was president from 1953 to 1961. So the producers of this program wanted the audience to guess from the plot of the episode which president it was. I guess listening to the show today, you will need to have somewhat of a grasp of United States history. The program starred Edward Arnold, who played the president in each episode, and supporting actors included B. Benaderet, Gil Stratton, Hans Conried, Lorene Tuttle, Nina Barra, and Herb Butterfield. All were well-known and respected actors on radio and later television, and some even in films. The announcer was Owen James. As a side note, in 1953, this program, Mr. President, received the Award of Merit from the Veterans of Foreign Wars organization. The title of the first episode you're going to hear on this track is The Tall Target, and it is from March 6, 1949. For Heirloom Radio, a different kind of oldies program, this is your host, John Lovering, thanking you for listening.
I find myself far from home and surrounded by thousands I now see before me who are strangers to me. Still, we are bound together in Christianity, civilization, and patriotism.
Mr. President, starring Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Edward Arnold. Mr. President at home in the White House, the elected leader of our people, our fellow citizen and neighbor. These are little-known stories of the men who've lived in the White House, dramatic, exciting events in their lives that you and I so rarely hear. True human stories of Mr. President.
Before we bring you Edward Arnold as Mr. President, I want to point out that there are no more stirring stories in the world than the stories of Americans who have become the leaders of our country. Generation after generation of American men and women have found their greatest inspiration in the lives of the presidents of the United States. Their deeds are direction pointers for the American mind. People today are more interested than ever to know the intimate, interesting, and inspiring facts about the lives of their former chief executives. That's why Mr. President has rapidly caught the attention of people everywhere. For here is the program that presents human, intimate anecdotes and incidents in the careers of our presidents. And you, as the listener, enjoy the additional thrill of trying to identify the president in the story being told. So test your knowledge of the men who have lived in the White House by listening now for today's fascinating Mr. President story. Now, in just a moment, Edward Arnold.
Here's a story that happened a few years ago. Listen closely and see if you can identify the president. The president was newly elected, and he and his family were on their way to Washington for his inauguration. It was a perilous time with the threat of war in the headlines. The president's journey was arranged to take him through five states. Like all of the presidents, he had a lot of friends, and he had more than his share of enemies.
It's me here.
Oh, come in, my dear, come in. We've just been going over my speech for tonight.
We're almost in Indianapolis. The conductor said it'd be about 15 more minutes. I have the bags together.
How about the children?
I've sent men in both directions hunting for them. Those boys can disappear while you've got your head turned.
Well, I'll help you hunt for them.
Is there going to be a big crowd at the station, Mr. Lamont?
They told us between 10 and 20,000.
Gracious, I'd better get my new hat out.
The governor has arranged an escort to take us to the Bates Hotel.
Well, the train is slowing down.
Oh, my goodness, we have to find the boys.
Listen.
What is that?
Those are the guns of Indianapolis, saluting the new president of the United States.
I'll certainly be glad when we get to the hotel. I don't know when I've seen so many people on the streets.
The president doesn't pass by often. It's a big thing when one does. It's something to tell your children. I saw the president on the way to his inauguration.
I hope the boys are behaving themselves back there. I told them to stay seated and not to jump up and down and upset the driver.
Oh, they'll be all right. It's funny, isn't it, how alike all the faces are? I've seen these same faces every place we've stopped. The faces of the ones that liked me, and the faces of the ones that hated me, and the faces of the ones who believe I'll ruin the country, and the ones that hope I might do something for it.
They'll all mighty soon see.
You know, I wish I could say to them, give me a chance. Just give me a chance. I was born of country earth and open sky. I grew listening to the dreams of free men. If you'll just give me a chance, I'll put my hand to making some of those dreams come true. I don't want to take anything from the country. I just want a chance to give.
If that's what you want to say, why don't you say it?
Oh, you can't say those things. All you can do is stand up before them and state your views and hope that they'll sense how you feel.
Yates and Du Bois are leaving us tonight. You know what Du Bois said to me this afternoon? He said, we are leaving the life of the president in your hands. And if you don't protect him with your own life, don't come home, because we'll kill you on sight.
Well, do they actually believe your life is in so much danger?
Any president's life is in danger.
I never thought of that.
It's just as well not to. What is to happen will happen.
Well, you talk as though you expected to be killed.
Oh, nonsense. There's the Bates Hotel up ahead, unless I'm very much mistaken.
Yeah, that's it, Oren.
We're stopping.
Here, let me get out of the carriage first.
No, I'll get out first.
Listen to them.
They love him.
Yes, but any one of them could have a gun.
Yes, and many of them have.
Oh, I'll be glad when we get him back on that train.
Oh, here you are.
Oh, hello, son.
What are you doing here all by yourself?
Oh, just thinking.
This is no way for a president to spend his birthday.
Even a president likes to get off to himself for a little quiet thinking once in a while. My son, do you know I'm 52 years old today?
I had an idea that you were. You've been bragging about it all day.
Well, we're crossing southern Indiana now. You know, once many, many years ago, there was a girl in Indiana.
Mother?
No. I wasn't much more than a boy myself. I didn't know your mother then. It was spring in Indiana, and it was the springtime of my life.
Well, where's the girl now?
Asleep, out there. Uh-oh. You know, days like this, we used to tramp across the fields, talking. We never stopped talking. She used to say that someday I'd be president, but I never believed her. Well, I'd better get back to work. Your mother sent me after Thomas and Willie, and I forgot all about it.
I forgot, too. She sent me to look for Thomas, Willie, and you.
Bob, will you take this case and keep good care of it for me? I'm afraid I'll put it down someplace and lose it.
Oh, of course I will, Father. What's in it?
It's my inaugural address. Watch it closely now. All my copies are in there.
Oh, I will.
Father?
Oh, hello, son.
Mother sent me to hunt for you and Bob and Willie.
Well, Willie's the only one that's lost now.
Willie isn't lost. He's up driving the train.
No.
Yes. He's got influence with the engineer.
Oh, come on. Let's get him quick before Mother finds out.
Would any of you happen to have seen the President of the United States or his three sons?
Well, we're going to collect Willie now, dear. He's up talking politics.
At his age, he must talk a brilliant game of politics.
Oh, he talks a better game than some of those politicians talk. What's that newspaper in your hand, my dear?
I was just reading the accounts of our reception in New York. It says here in Leslie's Weekly, we are requested to state that Mrs. Jonathan Stuyvesant did not call on the wife of the newly elected president during her stay at the Astor House.
Well, that's a little unnecessary, isn't it?
Well, evidently Mrs. Jonathan Stuyvesant didn't think so.
It's no laughing matter.
Oh, isn't it? Well. Here's the nation possibly on the verge of war. Some of the most important events of our history taking place, and Mrs. Jonathan Stuyvesant wants it clearly understood and stated that she did not call on you. Huh? You know something, my dear? I lived a long and happy life, and Mrs. Stuyvesant hasn't called on me either.
Willie says she's an old witch.
Oh, son, don't use that kind of language.
I didn't say it. Willie said it.
Well, Willie shouldn't talk like that either.
Willie says she probably goes every place on a broomstick.
Willie's getting entirely too smart. There's a nice account of your speech to the New Jersey Assembly in the paper.
Oh, really? Let me see it.
I've been sent in search of the president's wife, and the president's sons.
Oh, well, Award, who sent you?
Willie.
Willie?
Yes, he said you'd all disappeared, and he's hunting for you. You'd better put in an appearance before he pulls the emergency cord and stops the train. And let me tell you, he can stop the train anytime he wants. He has influence with the engineer.
Well, how did Willie get so much influence with the engineer?
The engineer wants to retire and be a postmaster.
I see.
And Willie has told him that he has a certain amount of influence with the incoming president of the United States.
You're going to have to spank that boy.
Why? He's telling the truth. He does have influence. Say, aren't we due in Philadelphia at 4:00?
My goodness, is it that late?
It's almost 4:00.
All right, boys, come with me and help get our things together.
Yes, let's get our things together and get off. Another city, another speech, another reception. My dear, I've shaken so many hands tonight that my hand feels like it's going to drop off.
Oh, but we really should go back into the reception.
Well, even the President of the United States is entitled to a few minutes to get a breath of fresh air.
Oh, here you are, Mr. President. I'm afraid I'll have to take you away from the reception for a few minutes.
Huh?
There's someone who has a message of great importance for you.
Oh, really? Who is it?
It's Mr. Alan Pinkerton.
The detective?
Yes.
Well, what does he want with the president?
It's purely a routine matter, Madam President.
You go in and entertain the guests, dear. I'll only be a few moments. You know, Pinkerton's a fine detective.
He's in the next room.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. President, this is an honor, sir.
How do you do, Mr. Pinkerton? Won't you sit down?
Thank you, Mr. President. As you may know, I have been in the employ of the Philadelphia, Wilmington, and Baltimore Railroad to guard trains.
Yes, I know, Mr. Pinkerton.
Recently, from some of my employees, I've had word of danger to you, sir. I didn't care to worry you with any threat of danger that might prove groundless, so I investigated myself.
I see.
Mr. President, there is a concrete and definite plot to assassinate you on your way through Baltimore the day after tomorrow.
And who is it that is going to kill me?
The ringleader is a barber named Fernandino.
I never heard of him.
Neither have I.
He's one of the... Well, he's really the head of several treasonable secret military societies in Baltimore. This plot, Mr. President, according to the conspirators themselves, even includes some of the police marshals.
Mr. Pinkerton became a member of the group for a time in order to find out what their plans were.
Now, don't underestimate Fernandino, Mr. President. He heads a large group. They have worked out their plot in the greatest detail.
Tell me, why do they want to kill me?
Why does any group want to kill a president? A difference in principles, in aims.
And how do they intend to accomplish this deed that they've resolved upon?
There will be only a small police force at the railroad depot in Baltimore. A fight will start to draw off the policemen at the moment of your arrival. Then the assassins will close around you, and the deed will be accomplished.
You know, I've wondered many times where I would breathe my last. Somehow the Baltimore depot never occurred to me.
It's nothing to laugh about, Mr. President.
It sounds like a game devised by schoolboys. A poor plot by a mediocre playwright. It isn't even good intrigue.
You can emerge from it just as dead as though it had been good intrigue.
There, I must admit, you have a point. Mr. Pinkerton, accepting your statements at their face value, what do you propose to do about this?
I would like to take you to Washington tonight, sir, secretly.
No, I can't do that, Mr. Pinkerton.
Tomorrow morning, I'm scheduled to raise the flag over Independence Hall, and then I must visit the legislature at Harrisburg. I'm not going to run away in the night like a frightened schoolboy. I'd be the laughingstock of the country. Mr. Pinkerton, I appreciate your concern for my welfare, but I must go ahead with my plans.
Well, Mr. President, I shall remain overnight with the hope of persuading you of the importance of my plans. As the President of the United States, it seems to me you owe it to the country to take whatever precautions seem necessary for the preservation of your person.
Even at the risk of appearing a coward?
At any risk whatsoever. So I shall remain in Philadelphia, and perhaps after your engagements tomorrow, you will reconsider.
Well, thank you, Mr. Pinkerton, but I doubt it. However, I will be glad to discuss the matter with you again tomorrow.
I shall await your pleasure, Mr. President.
Now, come in and join the guests. Mr. Lamont will show you about, won't you, Ward?
It'll be a pleasure.
If you'll excuse me, I'm going up to my room. I certainly find myself a little tired.
Good evening, Mr. President.
Who are you?
I'm Fred Seward, Mr. President. Your son, Bob, brought me up to your bedroom. He said it was the best place to talk to you confidentially.
Oh, I see.
My father sent me from Washington with some letters which he said were of such importance that he would trust them to no one else.
I understand. You are aware of the contents of these letters?
Oh, yes, Mr. President.
Your father writes that a New York detective has reported that there is serious danger to me in Baltimore and that I should change my plans of going through there.
Yes, sir.
Your father also says General Scott obtained the information. Do you know General Scott?
Yes, sir.
Did you ever hear your father or General Scott mention a detective named Pinkerton?
Why, no, sir.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to cross-examine you, but it's such a strange coincidence. If different people, not knowing each other, but investigating the same manner, come up with the same result, then there must be something in it. But on the other hand, if I'm just getting two versions of the same report through different channels, then the story has no more credence than it originally had.
My father asked me to urge you not to go to Baltimore.
Well, I shall think the matter over most carefully tonight, and I will let you know my decision in the morning.
Yes, Mr. President.
In just a moment, we'll come back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
The stage will be set tonight for Interference, the absorbing play Theater Guild on the Air will present over most ABC stations. And as the star performers, Raymond Massey, Zachary Scott, and June Dupre. Interference deals with the efforts of a noted London physician, Sir John Marley, to extricate his wife from a blackmail plot. A prominent social figure, Lady Marley, had been married to a soldier of fortune who was thought to have died in the war. When he suddenly reappears, Lady Marley tries to keep this knowledge from Sir John, her present husband. The only way she can do this is by paying several thousand pounds to the husband she thought had died. What happens in this intriguing drama provides an hour of exciting listening. So don't miss Raymond Massey, June Dupre, and Zachary Scott in Interference on Theater Guild On the Air. That's tonight over most ABC stations. Now back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
The presidential train was on its way east. The times were dangerous. The threat of thunder rumbled low across the land. And history held her breath, waiting for the storm to break. The president paced back and forth in his room until the blood-red sun began to rise in the east. Then he went, as he had promised, to raise the flag over Independence Hall. There was a tenseness in the morning, but he refused to acknowledge it. He went inside to speak to the waiting crowd in Independence Hall.
I am filled with deep emotion at finding myself standing in this place, where were collected together the wisdom, the patriotism, the devotion to principle, from which sprang the institutions under which we live. Liberty as a hope to all the world for all future time was the sentiment which guided those who met here. If this country cannot be saved without giving up that principle, I would rather be assassinated on this spot than surrender it. And I say in advance that there will be no bloodshed unless it be forced upon the government. The government will not use force unless force is used against it. I did not expect to be called on to say a word when I came here. I may have said something indiscreet. But if I have said nothing but what I am willing to live by, and if it be the pleasure of Almighty God, die by.
That was a fine speech, Mr. President.
Oh, thank you, Ward. I've decided to take Mr. Pinkerton's advice. I will let him arrange for me to go through Baltimore at a different hour.
Oh, I'm glad to hear you say that, Mr. President.
It goes against the grain, mind you. But as a president, pride is a luxury I can't afford just now. Tell me, did Pinkerton tell you any details of his plans about my departure for Washington?
Yes, after you left, he said that he saw no harm in you going to Harrisburg as long as you felt so strongly about continuing your trip, but that he felt from Harrisburg you must go directly to Washington.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tell him to go ahead with his plans. We'll talk about it on the train, and he can tell me exactly what he would like to have me do. People of Harrisburg, while I have been proud to see today the finest military array I think that I have ever seen, allow me to express the hope that in the shedding of blood their services may never be needed. Bob.
Oh, yes, Father.
Almost ready for dinner?
Ready and waiting. I hope they have good food here in Harrisburg. I'm starving.
Oh, you got a good lunch, didn't you?
Yes, but that was hours ago.
Bob, I'd like to take a look at my inaugural speech. There's some points I want to go over with Ward at dinner. But
don't you have it?
Don't I have it? I gave it to you to keep for me.
But when we got off the train, the men took the bags and I thought they put it with yours.
Well, you sure it's not in your room?
I'm positive.
But I told you to take care of it.
I'm sorry, Father. What shall I do?
Call Warden. We'll go down to the hotel baggage room right away. Maybe it's there.
I sure hope so.
Do you see anything that looks like it, Mr. President?
I never saw so many bags in all my life.
I have it.
Huh?
I have it.
Nice work, son.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes, that's it.
Oh, I was under a whole pile of things.
I have the key right here. Uh-huh. Well, it opens all right.
Oh.
Dirty shirt. Deck of cards, a bottle of whiskey.
Oh.
Gentlemen, most assuredly, that is not my inaugural address. Nor the theme of my inaugural address.
Well, there are lots of similar bags in the world.
Yes. Oh, wait a moment. There's another one right here.
Huh?
Now you see how easy it is to... Wait a moment. Let's have a look at that one.
I'll get it.
I'll swear those are Willie's teeth marks on that case. I know those teeth marks anywhere.
Oh, here, let me open it. Your hands are shaking, Father.
What do you think yours are doing? Oh, here it is. Yes, here it is. Oh, thank God, thank God.
Well, now we've got to get upstairs. Mr. Pinkerton is waiting for us.
All right, let us go. But from now on, I'm not letting this case out of my own hands.
I'm sorry, Father.
Well, don't get worried about it. It's all right. It's not your fault. I should have done that in the beginning. It isn't fair to unload your own responsibilities on other people. Come on, Ward, let's talk to Pinkerton. Then I'll have to talk to my wife.
Understand, dear. Mr. Pinkerton wants the rest of us to go on to Baltimore as usual.
Yes, Ward is waiting for me downstairs now.
Who's going with you?
No one.
Just Ward and you?
Yes, just Ward and me, and one car, and one locomotive, and one engineer.
Well, is that safe?
Well, Pinkerton seems to think so. It's being done in the best detective fashion. There'll be no lights, no communications. The telegraph linemen have cut all the wires. No telegrams will be delivered in or out of Harrisburg until Mr. Pinkerton gives the word.
Well, will this train take you all the way to Washington?
No, just to Philadelphia. Pinkerton is going to meet us in Philadelphia and get us on the New York-Washington train.
God keep you.
And you. And the boys. Goodbye, my dear. Kind of spooky, isn't it, Ward? like a ghost train cutting its way through the night. Somehow it doesn't seem like the right kind of entrance for a president. You know, a president should...
I know what you mean. The president should be standing in the sunlight and the band should be playing. He shouldn't have to sneak into town. Well, history keeps changing and the president has to do what the hour demands of him, just as you're doing.
You know, I'm beginning to wonder if I ever will get to Washington. Maybe I'll be the first president that was assassinated before he was inaugurated.
I think Mr. Pinkerton's much too efficient to permit a thing like that to happen.
How sad it must be to love the people and to die at their hands.
There's Mr. Pinkerton over by the corner.
I'm beginning to feel like a fugitive. Come on.
Ah, here you are, sir. Come with me. Did you have a pleasant trip?
Well, I've had pleasanter, but none quite so interesting.
Here we are. Now, if you and Mr. Lamont will get in, we're going to the PW&B station. This berth has been reserved by one of my woman detectives. She said it was for her invalid brother. You, sir.
I'm beginning to feel more and more like one.
Kindly remain in the berth with the curtains closed until you reach Washington. And above all, don't so much as stick a whisker out of the berth while the train is in Baltimore.
Yes, Mr. Pinkerton.
I shall be close by until you're safely in Washington.
Thank you, and believe me, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for all your efforts in my behalf.
Try and get some sleep, sir. I know this has all been a great deal of strain.
Yes, I will.
Well, we're on our way. Baltimore, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, Mr. Lamont. Baltimore.
I think he is asleep. Well, so far, so good.
One of my men just reported to me that all is well. Depot is perfectly quiet. Baltimore is asleep. Good night, Barbara Fernandino. Sleep deeply. The ships have passed in the night, and the hour and the man have escaped you.
Here we are, Mr. President, Washington, D.C. Just a moment. I'll get off ahead of you, if you don't mind.
Where's Mother Pinkerton?
Were you asking for me, Mr. President? Welcome to Washington.
How did you get down there on the platform ahead of me?
He got off the car ahead.
Oh, well, let's get off, then.
Senator Seward is waiting at Willard's to breakfast with you, Mr. President. He didn't want to cause any commotion by appearing on the platform.
How did you know he's waiting at Willard's?
The message was conveyed to me by certain sources.
Mr. Pinkerton, you are amazing.
Mr. President, may I return the compliment? My association with you shall always be one of my most treasured memories.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I'm sure that you figured out by now who the president was when all that happened, because it really did happen, you know, and you'll have the answer in just a moment.
If you're a movie fan, chances are you have some favorite. And whether it's Ingrid or Carey, chances are that you'll hear your favorite star at some time on the Luella Parsons Show. Tonight, Miss Parsons holds open house for lovely Jane Wyman. Were you one of the millions who thrilled to Jane Wyman's performance as the mute in Johnny Belinda? She was a sensation in this role, and for her outstanding performance, has become one of the leading contenders for the cherished Academy Award. You'll want to meet Jane Wyman tonight when she appears as guest star on the Luella Parsons Show. This is the show that brings Hollywood right into your own home. So don't miss the Luella Parsons Show with Jane Wyman as guest star tonight over most ABC stations. Now, once again, Edward Arnold.
Willard's.
This is where we say goodbye, Mr. President.
Goodbye, Mr. Pinkerton, and thank you again. You're finished with this case now?
Well, the only thing I must do now is restore the telegraph service and send this message by code. Here, read it if you like.
This is to report the safe arrival in Washington of President Abraham Lincoln. Yes, it was Abraham Lincoln whose assassination was plotted by the barber Fernandino before his inauguration, and who was so ingeniously rescued by Detective Pinkerton. His family continued as planned through Baltimore, where the expected demonstration against the president did take place. But the disappointed conspirators had lost their victim. Be with us again next week, won't you, for another exciting story that happened in Washington a few years ago to Mr. President.
Edward Arnold can currently be seen in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production Command Decision. Mr. President was created by Robert G. Jennings. It was produced and directed by Leonard Reed. Today's story by Gene Holloway was based on incidents in the life of President Abraham Lincoln. Music was composed and conducted by Basil Adlam.
Be sure to listen again next week when the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Edward Arnold with another interesting and factual story of Mr. President. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.